This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now part of the Believe Network. Very excited about that. In this episode, I'll be joined by some insiders who've covered a few of the Texans' draft picks. And let's start off with Jordan Hill, who covers the Georgia Bulldogs, meaning he's very familiar with Texans' second-round pick, Kamari Lassiter. Jordan hosts the Junkyard Dogcast and is a beat writer for Dogs 24/7. Great to have you on the show, Jordan. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, definitely, Robert. Happy to be on.
All right, let's start off with some numbers on him. His Pro Football Focus grade last year, 85.4, zero touchdowns is what he gave up, and only 15 catches for 136 yards the whole season. Incredible season for him. Jordan, what can the Texans expect from Kamari?
Well, you know, I think it's a great pickup by the Texans. Kamari was actually the only prediction that I got right as far as all the Georgia players. I thought he made a lot of sense for Houston there. I thought he had an outstanding 2023. He was sort of Georgia's lockdown corner. They had competition at the cornerback spot opposite him. He took a lot of tension off the defense because they knew they could count on him. He did an outstanding job. I feel like he got dinged with what he ran at his pro day at Georgia. Wasn't quite as fast as people expected, but I really, really think that the Texans got a steal in Kamari Lassiter. He strikes me as the kind of guy that's going to be a pro for 7-8 years. I think he's going to fit in really well in Houston. I am really excited for him. I think he'll be a big addition to that Texans defense.
Yeah, you just said something I wanted to ask you about, because he does seem to play faster than he tests. And then NFL draft expert Lance Zierlein said he's likely a slot corner. He's concerned a little bit about the long straight line speed that he's got. Do you agree? Do you feel like he can handle, you know, the outside guys as well as the slot guys?
I believe he can. I do think he'll probably have to grow in terms of handling deep balls. It seems like he was susceptible to giving up plays from time to time, but I think he's really talented. And honestly, when I look at Georgia and you look at Kirby Smart, the time he's been the head coach, they know what they're looking for in defensive backs. And I think if they were concerned at all when they were recruiting him, when he came into the program, about his ability, you know, I think they had plenty of other options. I think Kamari's up for the challenge. And yeah, I think he's a guy that plays a lot faster than he's going to test. I think they're going to be really, really happy with that addition. I think in due time, he's going to be playing a really big role for the defense.
Were there any weaknesses that you guys saw?
I think probably what I just mentioned, you know, maybe giving up a deep ball every now and then. But I really like watching Kamari. He was a really good in man coverage. He's really physical. And that's a big part of Georgia's secondary year after year, is they want guys that are willing to hit. And Kamari could do that. He's not a guy that's got great hands. I think he might have had one interception during his time at Georgia, but really good at breaking up passes, really good at sticking with his guy. There are weaknesses here and there. And again, I'm sure that's a big part of why he was not the first corner off the board. But I think he's got a really bright future. I think he's going to do very well with the Texans.
I want to talk a little bit about the intangibles too. His backstory, it's something else. His mom worked multiple jobs, slept on the couch at his aunt's house so he could go to a great private high school and get the best education, finished high school with a 4.0 GPA. Also, Jordan, it had to impress Casario and D'Amico that Lassiter chose not to opt out of the Orange Bowl. I know it impressed your coach that he did that, while many draft-eligible guys are skipping bowl games these days.
Definitely. I mean, Kamari is a great guy. He was always someone I look forward to during interviews. Really thoughtful, really, you know, breaks down the different questions he gets, takes his role seriously. And yeah, I mean, I thought that really him playing in the Orange Bowl pretty much told you all you needed to know. And we talked to him in the days leading up to that game. You've got a lot that you are kind of risking by playing in this bowl game where so many other guys have opted out. And he basically said, you know, as long as I was healthy enough to play, I was going to play. And Kirby Smart talked about it after they won that game, that initially Kamari was sort of thinking about sitting out. And basically they got a few days into practice and he just went to Kirby and said, I can't do it. You know, I can't just sit and watch this team, my teammates go out there and play and me not participate. Kamari's a great guy. I don't know anyone around Athens who would have a negative thing to say about him. He's one of those guys like many on this past Georgia team where, you know, you're excited to see what they do at the next level. I think he's got a great head on his shoulders. Super excited to see what he's able to do as a pro player.
Yeah, looking forward to having him here. SEC guys, very popular with our general manager. As you might notice, Will Anderson was first round pick last year, of course, and there's a bunch of other guys, Christian Harris as well from Alabama. So the LSU, Derek Stingley, I mean, I can go on and on, but just looking forward to see what he can do. Hopefully, you know, he can handle that number two cornerback position because they badly need, you know, they got two guys that they're taking chances on there that they picked up in free agency that have been bust elsewhere. So, you know, he does have an opportunity to start this year if he can handle that, and that would be fantastic. But, hey, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about him and, you know, just looking forward to getting to see him.
Definitely. And I'll be following y'all's coverage of him. And like I said, super excited to see what he does as a Texan.
Joining me for a little insight into Texans' second round pick, offensive tackle Blake Fisher, is Notre Dame insider and host of the Irish Breakdown podcast on the Blue Wire Network. It's Brian Driscoll. So glad to have you for a few minutes to give us a little of information, because I know Texans fans would love to know more about Blake Fisher. What can you tell us about him?
Talented. I mean, look, this is a program that produces offensive linemen at a rate that we just don't see very often. And Blake was one of those unicorns that actually earned a starting job in game one of his true freshman season against Florida State. He ended up getting hurt in that game, missed the next 11 games, and didn't come back till the bowl game. And by that time, Joe Alt had established himself as the team starting left tackle. But Blake actually beat Joe Alt out in fall camp that year and won that starting left tackle job. He's an interesting player. You know, his senior year was during the COVID year. He missed all but two games of his freshman year. He had three different position coaches in his 3 years at Notre Dame. He had Jeff Quinn as a freshman in 2021, Harry Hiestand in 2022, and then Joe Rudolph this past year. So it's been very tumultuous for Blake, and I think that's stunted his development a little bit in certain ways. He hasn't been as consistent as you would like him to be. He hasn't been as dominant in the as many stretches as you'd like him to be. But the thing you see when you break down the film is this is a young man with a very high ceiling. He certainly has a little bit more bust potential than some of the other high draft picks that Notre Dame has had because he is young and the factors that I mentioned. But if he hits and he gets coached up and he puts in the work and he hits, this is a kid to me that has the potential to outplay his draft where he was selected, his draft positioning. So lots of talent, could play tackle, could play guard. There's a lot of things to like about Blake Fisher. It's just you got to be a little patient with him and understand he's one of the younger linemen in this class. He's had all those things kind of working against him. But when he's on, he's really good. And if you want an example of that, go watch him against Ohio State this year against their two potential first-round picks at defensive end next year. It's one of the best games of his career. And you say, if you get that Blake to show up on a consistent basis, got a heck of a football player.
You mentioned him having a millisecond there where he played guard. The Texans are in this interesting situation where they've got Titus Howard. They've got Laramie Tunsil at the tackle positions. Kenyon Green, they drafted in the first round a couple of years ago for guard, but you know, he didn't look good his first year, missed his entire second year. That position is a little bit up for grabs. I mean, I know they want Kenyon Green to take it, but do you think Fisher can be a pretty good guard, or do you feel like his more natural position is tackle, or is he that versatile?
Well, we've never seen him really play a lot at guard at Notre Dame. He's been on the edge. I personally think his skill set better suits playing inside. I think he can handle the outside. You know, there's going to be times where really good speed off the edge can give Blake some problems. His technique isn't what it needs to be. His hand play needs to improve a ton. So there's certainly an area he can get better. He's a 6'6 kid with 34 plus inch arms. So the tools are there. But I've just felt when you see Blake at his best, he's coming off the line. He's drive blocking. He's getting a push off the line. He's playing in tighter spaces. I just feel he's a kid that's more comfortable when the action's quicker. And inside a guard, the action's quicker. Pass protection, it happens quicker. It gets to you quicker. Whether it's a defensive lineman, whether it's an end slamming on you on a twist, whether it's a second-level player coming on a pressure, things just tend to happen a lot quicker. It's in a little bit tighter windows, and that's where his game flourishes, because his best moments in college were him coming off and just drive blocking on zones or down blocks and just really getting that push. So I certainly believe Blake has the physical tools to slide inside and thrive at guard. The question is will he be able to make the technical adjustment? I think he can, but that's going to be the thing. Because as you know, guard and tackle, it hits different. It's just a different position. Some guys can make the move seamlessly. Some can't. Jarrett Patterson in his career at Notre Dame played left tackle, center, left guard, literally throughout his career. And he was able to handle all those different moves. Some guys get real comfortable at one position. So I can't say definitively that Blake will be able to play guard. I have just always felt that that's where his game would be more ideally suited, to where he could be a good right tackle. There's no doubt. He could be a guy that you say, that guy should have probably gone late first round. I've always felt he's got all pro potential as a guard just because of the strengths of his game.
Yeah, that's real interesting. You know, he allowed, from the numbers I have, 3 sacks and 9 hurries this past season. The run game for Notre Dame was incredible, 185 yards per game. Is his strength more as a run or pass blocker?
It's run blocker, no question. I mean, when Blake's on, he can do a little bit of everything. But when he's really dominant, it's in the run game. He can handle himself well on the edge in the pass game. But he's really at his best in the run game. You look at the first half of the Clemson games, another game where I thought Blake played really well in the run game. You look at the Ohio State game this year. When he comes off, keeps his pad lows, drives his hips through contacts, and uses his hands, he can move people, right? And that's ultimately what separates the good blockers from the great blockers, in my opinion. The good blockers can get off the line. They play with good angles. They stay attached. They do their job. The great blockers, the guys can really come off the line and move people. And, you know, that's what's made Zach Martin so good, is he's not only incredibly consistent, but he can play physical football. He can move you. Quentin Nelson can move you. Those are the kind of guys that have been at their best. When Ronnie Stanley came into the league, he was a good player, but he didn't really become a dominant player till his run blocking took that next level. And so to me, that's where Blake's game is best, is coming off and not just doing his job, but he can push people around. He can maul you. He can push you off the line. He just has to be more consistent from an approach standpoint, not just the fundamental standpoint, but it's just – you know, with Blake, you'd get a different kind of version of him each week. And that's where that youth and that immaturity as a player. And when I mean immaturity, I'm talking about from a football standpoint. You know, Blake's a great young man off the field. It's the football standpoint, because he is a true junior. He just turned 21 years old. I mean, this is a puppy in a lot of ways, but the potential is there. And I think the run game is where he really, really, to me, makes his money.
I was just reading, interesting relationship between Fisher and former Irish teammate. You mentioned him a few minutes ago, Jarrett Patterson. He actually credits last year's Texan 6th-round pick, Jarrett Patterson, for taking him under his wing at Notre Dame. He also gave the Texans his take on Fisher, Patterson did. So you wonder how much that played into them drafting Blake. So basically, you know, he's kind of pulled him along a little bit at Notre Dame, and now he might have just pulled him into a really good NFL situation with the Texans. What kind of a guy was Patterson when he was at Notre Dame? I mean, were you surprised at all at how well he played last year for the Texans?
No, Jarrett should have been a higher draft pick. He just had his last 2 years, he had some injuries he worked through. He moved from center to guard. His potential was higher, in my opinion, than the 6th-round draft pick. I've seen worse players than Jarrett Patterson get picked on late day two. So I'm not surprised that Jarrett made an immediate impact. He's a smart kid. He's an athletic kid. He's a very quality athlete up the middle. I didn't get a chance to watch him with the Texans, but at Notre Dame, he wasn't necessarily a mover, but he played with great leverage and uses athleticism to really win and beat you to spots. And some of the injuries he had his last couple of years kept him from really taking that next step as a mover, as a guy that could come off and dominate. But he's just that guy as a former quarterback that I love as an offensive lineman, is he just does his job every snap. You know, he didn't give up a sack his entire career. You just kind of knew, okay, well, they're not going to sack me there. You're not going to worry about those other positions. And you're talking about a guy that was a captain for Notre Dame, not just the captain part, obviously, but then also was a leader of the offensive line, team player, took the, you know, he got injured late in the 2021 season. And so he comes into 2022. By the time he's healthy again, Zeke Crowe has kind of established himself as the team's center. So they move Jarrett to left guard, and he takes it like a champ. He's like, hey, if this is what you need me to do, this is what I'll do. And it took him a little while to get comfortable there, but the one thing that never took a back seat was the leadership. And I would imagine that the thing that Jarrett could get across to the Texans organization was not, you know, Blake can block and he can do that. The scouts can evaluate that. It is, this is the kind of young man he is. This is the kid that I knew. And they're going to talk about how, you know, we've talked about this in our show with Blake, is Notre Dame does a lot of community outreach. That's something that they really push on their players. The NIL program that they have called the Fund in is a lot of ways tied to how involved you are in the community. And every time there's some sort of thing going on, you'd always see Blake there. You know, he took a lot of pride in, hey, I'm a Notre Dame football player. That means I need to be a leader in the community. I need to be seen. I need to be a role model for young people. And you're watching him do this at 19 and 20 years old. And I would imagine that's the kind of stuff that Jarrett Patterson got across to them. It's like, hey, you're going to get a kid that's going to have the right attitude. He's going to come in. He's going to put in the work and be a good part of this organization. And it's up to you guys to coach him up and get the most out of him from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, and with those two guys and Nick Martin, there's three Notre Dame offensive linemen the Texans have drafted over the last decade or so. You were just telling me before we started, like, Notre Dame's become O-line U in a lot of ways.
Oh, I mean, it's not even a debate anymore. I mean, there are other teams that have put more players into the draft. Alabama's put in, I think, since 2014 when Zach Martin was first drafted. That year, Chris Watt and Zach Martin were both picked. I think off the top of my head, Bama has had 16 guys drafted. Georgia, Michigan has had – Ohio State's had 16. Michigan's had, I think, 14. Georgia and LSU have had 13. And then there's Notre Dame with now 12, including the two kids from this year. Only Bama can match what Notre Dame has done as far as rounds 1, 2, and 3. They've put 10. 10 of Notre Dame's 12 blockers were taken in the first three rounds. Ironically, one of the two guys that wasn't taken in the first three rounds was Jarrett Patterson, who started as a rookie with the Texans. But during that stretch from 2014 to last season, Notre Dame has had three of their blockers have turned into all pros that have combined for 14 all pros. That's more than Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, LSU, and Michigan combined. So it's not just producing high draft picks and guys in the NFL. It's they're producing quality. And then beyond the quality, I mean, you've got the all-pro guys, but, you know, Mike McGlinchey just got a big payday last offseason going to the Denver Broncos. You've got Jarrett Patterson starting for the Texans. Tommy Kramer went undrafted and started almost half a season for the Lions as a rookie. You know, Sam Mustipher's still kicking around the league and a guy that's making money. So it's not just, okay, they're producing NFL players. They're producing quality NFL players. And that's something I think that the NFL covets is, hey, you get a Notre Dame offensive lineman, you got a pretty good chance of this guy becoming, at the very least, a productive pro, and a greater chance than anybody else at him turning into an impact blocker. In 2019, it was kind of funny, Robert, there was the AP released their all-pro team. Three of their all-pro offensive linemen were Notre Dame guys, Ronnie Stanley, Zach Martin, and Quentin Nelson. There's nobody that can touch that when it comes to producing, at least in the last 10 years. Oklahoma had a great run with, you know, Trent Williams and Lane Johnson, and they've had a ton of those, but those guys were drafted before. I'm just looking at the stretch since really the Harry Heistam players started getting pumped out into the NFL.
Hope we got a few more Pro Bowls with those guys that we just picked up the last couple of years. That would be fantastic. The strangest fact I'm going to hit you with, I heard that both Blake Fisher and CJ Stroud had a family dog named Oreo. So I don't know if that means anything, but at least they've got that connection.
Hey, let's go with it. If he can have the same kind of rookie year CJ Stroud did, the Texans are going to have themselves a player. There's no doubt.
Well, my big claim to fame as far as Notre Dame is concerned, I was on campus there stopping in one summer. I like walked around walked in the football stadium. The doors were open, the gates were open, and I got in during the summer when nobody was there, which was kind of fun. But my bigger claim to fame is I did get to talk to and shoot an interview with Rudy Rudiger about 25 years ago. And I can just tell you that, and I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him, but he is exactly what you would think Rudy Rudiger is.
Yes. Yeah. He's got a lot of fire. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time and talking to us, and can't wait to see Blake Fisher in a Texans uniform, and appreciate you just giving us the 911 on him, or the 411, I should say.
Thanks for having me on.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Joining me for a little insight into Texans third-round pick Kalen Bullock and seventh-round pick Solomon Bird is Nara Wang, who covers USC right here on the Believe Network as host of the Everything USC podcast. It's great to connect with you, Nara. What can you tell us about USC safety Kalen Bullock? Texans fans are dying to know.
Robert, thanks for having me on the show. Love to get to talk about USC anytime, so happy to be here with you. And for Kalen Bullock, he is a guy who, after his first two seasons at USC, you would not have thought he would have been a third-round pick. He was All-American after his sophomore year. He was a freshman All-American. Heck, even through midway of last season, he was an AP midseason All-American, and now he ends up in the third round, so you got to wonder why. Well, part of it is due to USC's crash in the second half of last season, because Kalen really did kind of go down with the ship. He was not good over the last half of the season, and that probably affected his tape and how he looked on film for teams evaluating him, because what I like to say about Kalen Bullock is that he is a natural football player, just has natural abilities, instincts, and is a pretty good athlete. Not elite athlete necessarily, but a good enough athlete to play at the NFL level. The issue with Kalen is that sometimes in run support and tackling, it was an issue. Now, you could say that about pretty much every USC defensive player maybe for the last few years, but for Kalen, you really noticed it against the better teams over the second half of the season, where he would just take some angles sometimes. And you'd wonder if maybe does he have vision problems? Did he fail geometry in school? Because he really was taking bad angles for tackles. And as a guy who's only 188 pounds, sometimes he thinks he's Ronnie Lott and tries to lay a big shoulder hit, and guys would just bounce off the tackles and move on from there. But the positives about Kalen Bullock are that he is really good in coverage. So if you're going to play him in a cover two, cover three scheme as a single high safety, too high safety, he's going to be really good, especially in zone coverage. Against man, sometimes it looks like he's beaten off the ball a little bit, but then he has great catch-up speed, catch-up ability, and he's got the length and the frame to make plays. So in coverage, I don't think there's going to be much of a problem for him. I think the issue for him is to get maybe a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger to help with his tackling and to just get better at making some reads. And sometimes he would make some really big plays, and other times he would maybe gamble a little bit and get burned. So for Kalen Bullock, I think he's going to be really solid at the NFL level. Whether he can become a star is another matter, and that's going to be cleaning up some of the things that people saw on tape about him.
And the numbers I've got for him are 9 interceptions over the last 3 years, 2 pick sixes. Is that right?
That is correct. He has a big play ability when he gets the ball in his hands. So that's one thing that Texans fans can look forward to, is that when Kalen does make big plays, they're going to be wild plays. You're going to say, this guy is amazing. If he can continue to do that and make those big plays that he did for USC, I think Texans fans will be happy about getting him in the third round. He just has to clean up some of the basics, especially in tackling and in run support. But in terms of coverage skills, I don't know if there was really a better safety out there in terms of coverage skills than Kalen Bullock.
Yeah, everything you describe reminds me that NFL draft expert Lance Zierlein, who is local here, he talked about Bullock, and he said he could see him potentially at some point transitioning to cornerback maybe. Could you see that?
I think he could probably be a slot cornerback and cover tight ends and some of those guys, because he does have a frame and that, again, that coverage ability to catch up when it looks like maybe he's a step and a half behind a guy, and all of a sudden he's knocking the ball away or making a pick. He does have really good ball skills when it's in the air in coverage. So I don't know that he could be a full-time cornerback. He might be one of those hybrids that you can play at corner and at safety and cover both positions. And that may end up being his role long-term, is that he's just a hybrid guy who you can fit in wherever you need him to play at the NFL level.
Can you tell us anything about his background, intangibles, leadership? I mean, what was he known as amongst the USC players?
I think he was known as more of a quiet leader. He wasn't necessarily the guy who's going to get in people's faces and yell at them and everything. And that maybe helps contribute to when a team is kind of struggling, like USC's team did over the second half of the 2023 season, where maybe you need a louder voice, get people fired up and everything like that. But in reality, his play kind of suffered as the team's play suffered. So you worry about that at the next level. But by all accounts, he was a good teammate. People liked him. And he was a guy who made plays on the field, led by example, and he did it starting his freshman year. He was very well respected from jump as a freshman at USC. And so I think it's pretty rare when you find guys who are like that, who come in immediately as a freshman, and you have teammates and you have people talking about him like, hey, you got to watch this kid. He's going to be a star someday. And so I don't think that's going to be an issue at the NFL level. I think he's a guy who, again, can make those big wild plays, get a team excited about that, get fans excited about that. So I don't think there'll be any issues in terms of that kind of stuff with Kalen. It's just a matter of, can he do all the things that a safety in today's NFL needs to do in order to be a guy who plays every down at the NFL side?
All right, Nara. So prior to this week, the Texans' only draft pick out of USC was Brian Cushing. They tripled their Trojan draft picks with the Bullock and the other guy I wanted to ask you about, defensive end Solomon Bird. Sort of took a flyer on him late in the draft. What are we getting with Bird?
So Solomon Bird is a guy who's definitely probably a fringe NFL guy. He's got the body. When you look at him, you think, hey, this is an NFL defensive end. Sometimes the production didn't match the athletic ability. He is a guy who's probably going to be more of a specialized pass rusher for the NFL. And if he can do that role well, get a few sacks, get pressures on the quarterback, then I think he can possibly stick around. But it's always going to be tough. You're a seventh round pick. I think a lot of people didn't expect Solomon Bird even to get drafted necessarily, but he is a guy who's good athletically, has a chance to possibly, if he can find that niche role as a, you know, third down type of rush specialist, he could possibly stick in the NFL because he's got talent, he's got ability. It's just a matter of putting it all together for Solomon.
So really interesting that they went with a couple of USC guys this year. If anybody is a fan of USC, there you go. Nara Wang Sports on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Everything USC podcast. Go check it out. It's on our Believe Network. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk about these guys, Nara. It's good to hear from a USC perspective, and loved having you on the show, man.
I appreciate it. Glad to be on with you, Robert.
I want to welcome back Bryant Browning, host of the Believe in Buckeyes podcast and a former Ohio State guard. Last year, Bryant, you gave us the inside scoop on CJ Stroud, and because that worked out so well, I think, man, we got to bring you back. It's great to see you. And tell us if we drafted another gem out of Ohio State and Stroud's old teammate, tight end Cade Stover.
Good to see you too, Robert. Thanks for having me on the show. But I would say you guys did. You guys know what you guys are doing. You're bringing in a winning culture. Cade Stover is a fantastic player. He's a gritty guy. He's a team first guy. He's definitely a guy that would really lay it on the line any given Sunday and make the plays needed to win a game. So you guys did a good job.
Yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, his background, because I know he spent 2 years as a tight end, but previously he was playing defense. His nickname, Farmer Gronk, I just found out, which means a lot because he was raised on a farm and has said he plans to go back to farming when football is over. And that blue collar background, Brent, might explain why Casario said, quote, from a makeup, traits, toughness mentality, this is an elite guy. He also said Stover was probably playing hurt this past season with an MCL. Did you get the sense he was dealing with any injuries?
Oh yeah, I mean it was obvious. I mean, I think I don't know what week he kind of put the knee brace on under the padding. And, you know, they wear the long socks in college, but you could tell there's something there, right? And that wasn't something that he was used to, but it really didn't affect, I would say, his timing for playmaking. Obviously, I'm a former offensive lineman. We used to wear those knee braces everywhere, right? And they literally slow you down. You literally cannot run as fast as you would want to run once you put that knee brace on. But K still make plays. I mean, any ball that was in this area that he had a chance to make a play on, he was able to do it. In a year where I would say our quarterback play just wasn't, I'm not going to say it was bad, but it just wasn't what we were typically used to, right? We're coming from CJ, and then we had Kyle McCord, who's not a CJ style type of guy, but essentially he always was finding himself in the right spot, was timely in his playmaking, and always felt like he was making a play to get the first down to keep the drive going, especially early in games where you could tell our quarterback was still trying to maybe kind of feel his way into a game. He made himself a very friendly wide receiver for sure.
One of the things that we heard also is still sort of learning blocking. And as a guard, you've done a little blocking at Ohio State. So, you know, where is he, do you feel like, at this point with his blocking game as a tight end?
I would say that's definitely his greatest opportunity to improve. I feel like naturally he's able to get out the balls and make contested catches. That's what he do. That's what he did at Ohio State. I'm sure he'll be able to continue to do that in Houston. But if it is something, I would say that it's a chance for him to kind of improve on in this game. It's really the lining up at the edge of the line of scrimmage, going toe-to-toe with a defensive end, linebacker, and winning blocks in that fashion. At Ohio State, to be honest, we didn't ask him to do that much. But when we did ask him, I'm not going to say it was he was essentially knocking out the park. So it is some opportunity for him to kind of get in with a professional coach, right, and kind of learn some more techniques to kind of do better at that standpoint, whether it's cutting the guy off on the backside end or being at that point of attack and maybe working a double team up to a linebacker. He definitely has some room to improve in that part of his game.
Stover's pre-draft measurements and even his stats, nearly a carbon copy of George Kittle. So that's a good thing to know to start with. But Caserio called him everything you want in a football player and more, and said he's probably one of our favorite football players in the entire draft. So the Texans, obviously very high on him. Just as a person, do you know much about him and what kind of leader he was for the Buckeyes?
I know the team loved him. Personally, I don't know him very well. I have met him a couple of times with this, you know, head shake type of deal. But the team loves him because he's just a leader. He's the type of guy that kind of goes out and put the work first, right? He's not the biggest, you know, hoorah, rah-rah guy, you know, loud speaking or a speeches type of person. But if you just watch him, his worth ethic kind of just shows, right? We're talking about a guy, like you say, just switched over from the defense over to the offense, right? Learning a new position. And essentially, just kind of doing it effortlessly, right? And that just goes to his work ethic. And him just going out there, working hard. Like I say, talk about the injuries, pinning his body on the line. And he just has a knack for making big plays when it's needed the most. Like I say, he's just a friendly guy. He's a tough guy. If you put him up there for a contested ball, good things tend to happen because he's just fighting like hell to make sure it works out. That's for sure.
So what I'm hearing is we might have gotten another good one. What I also am hearing is maybe there should be some big old Texans fan parties in Columbus, Ohio this year. I mean – They got to be excited about CJ there already, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two really fan favorites, right? CJ Stroud and all that he brought to Ohio State, all the plays that he made. Then you bring in K. Stover right to that. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some new Houston Texans bar backers in the Columbus area to kind of support. But like I said, I mean, you're just talking about two good guys who know how to go about it the right way, who's really passionate about winning games. And what better situation for Kay to kind of go in and be once again with CJ. So you can kind of learn that playbook, kind of keep building on that chemistry that they already showed to have, and essentially just continue to be successful in the professional game as they were in college.
Yeah, keep sending us some good players down here. We love it.
keep drafting them. You guys are calling the right shots, that's for sure. Get some good guys.
Hey, thanks for the time, man. It's always good to see you.
Oh, yeah, same here. Thanks for having me on, Robert. Talk with you soon.
Joining me is Caleb Hall, who covers the Louisville Cardinals on the Believe Network as host of Cardinal Coverage, a Louisville podcast. Caleb also writes for FanSided's Big Red Louis website. Great to catch up with you, Caleb, and really looking forward to your take on Texan six-round pick running back Juwar Jordan.
Yeah, it's good to be on here. I'm glad you guys took Juwar. He was probably one of the steals in the sixth round.
Tell me a little bit about him. What can Texans fans expect with Juwan Jordan?
Yeah, so he's been at Louisville, I think, 3 years. And in 2022, he was pretty much the lead back, but he kind of split carries with Tyon Johnson. And then last year, he was relatively the lead back. And for the first six games, he was pretty unstoppable, where the first six games, he had over 100 yards in three of the games, two touchdowns against Notre Dame, top 10 team. But after those first six games, he had just a nagging injury, and he still played okay, but it wasn't those first six games that he played for Louisville. But then after that, he didn't play as well, but still, even that, I mean, he was running for 70 or 80 yards a game. But at full health, Juwan Jordan's probably a fourth round pick easily.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what are the weaknesses that prevented him from getting drafted a little higher? I saw in some of the draft experts were saying maybe some size and explosiveness, you know, that prevented him. What did you hear?
I think it was his draft combine. He didn't have a great draft combine. It takes him a second to get going, but once he gets going, he's fast, but he doesn't have that like electric speed from the first snap. But from what I've saw and what people are saying is he was one of the best zone runners in the country. In Houston's system, he should excel pretty well at that if he's given the chance, of course.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're looking for. And that was Damian Pierce's issue last year when they moved over to the zone system. He was having trouble with that at running back. His Pro Football Focus grade, Juwan's, was 87.9. Fantastic. What we heard a lot was that he plays faster than he tests. Is that what you see when you watch him on the field?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you give him a crease and he breaks through that first tackle or he breaks through the first hole, he can get going and he's very quick. And you saw that against a team like Notre Dame where they always have big guys up front. It's tough to break through. And he had, I think I have it here, he had 143 yards and two touchdowns. And one of the touchdowns he had was like a 40 plus yard run. I mean, he can break through. You just have to give him that hole or that crease and he's pretty much gone.
Yeah, which goes to another thing that really, I think, mattered for the Texans. Late round picks typically are where you get your special teams guys. And those two kickoff returns last year had to make a huge impression on the Texans. I mean, he's a great kickoff returner, it looks like.
Yeah, in 2021, which he didn't get much playing time at all, but he did have a return touchdown in the bowl game against Air Force in 21. And in 2022, he had a return for a touchdown. So he's got that as well.
Anything that you could tell us about him personally, leadership, you know, how is he thought of among the Cardinal staff and Cardinal coaches and things like that? What kind of intangibles could he bring?
He's just kind of like an all around, like he's going to work and work and work. And he went from the bottom of the depth chart to then he was second string, then he was first string. And he's just kind of a workhorse type of guy. And he's going to do what needs to be done. And, you know, if he's not at the top of the chart, then he'll do his best to work his way up. But he's not going to, you know, say, you know, I want to be released or I want to be traded just because he's low. That just gives him more fuel to work.
How are his hands? I mean, he's a kick returner, so they trust him back there. Great hands, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's not like a guy that you're going to throw to in the backfield like a ton, but he's still a pretty quality catching back.
Yeah, I assume that's plays into this because they could use some third down back because Joe Mixon, that is not what he does all that well. He is not a third down back, particularly because his blocking is a little bit suspect in the passing game. So the third and long situations, I think, going to be a little. I mean, he's definitely a good pass catcher, but that's one of the issues with him. Really good stuff. Any final thoughts before I let you go on Juwan and just what the Texans can get with that guy?
I think he's a steal in the draft because he was injured and he ran kind of a slow combine. But I feel like if he gets the time and the playing time on the field, he can really be a quality player for the Texans as good as next season. It just depends on if he's 100% and if they give him a chance to play.
Sounds good. Looking forward to seeing Juwan in a Texans uniform. The new Texans uniforms, by the way, that should be pretty cool looking to see the guys in those. But hey, thanks a bunch for doing this. Thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate your insight.
Yeah, no problem, man.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase,
It's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.